an immigrant.
This tape will become part of the Scandinavian Immigrant Experience Collection at Pacific Lutheran University. The date today is December 16th, 1981. The interview is taking place in the home of Norwal Styro in Tacoma, Washington, and is being conducted by Maureen Nesvig. What is your full name, please?
Norwal Arneberg Styro.
And when were you born, Mr. Styro?
I was born the 22nd of November, 1896, Sortland, Norway.
And where were you born? Will you say it one more time?
Sortland.
Sortland.
S-O-R-T-L-A-N-D.
And which part of Norway is that?
Oh, that's way up north, about 200 miles north of the Arctic Circle, on the island of Narvik.
It's an island?
An island, yeah. It's a little town on the island.
Is that part of the Lofoten Islands? Or?
It's a few miles north of Lofoten.
All right. What were your parents' names?
Father, he was Peter Hansen Styro. Styro is a home place in Norway.
Styro is the name of your farm. The farm, the family farm.
And my mother was Oline. Olina Alert Marie.
Her maiden name was?
Peterson.
And what was your father's occupation?
He was a farmer and a commercial fisherman.
Commercial fisherman. And what type of work did he do? Did he have his own boat? Or?
Yeah, he had his own boat. Cod fish and herring.
And what was life like as a fisherman in up way up north there?
Well, it was pretty rough. He went to Lofoten in the after New Year and come back first part of April. And then sometimes they went up to Finnmark to fish for a couple of months and then come back and then do the chore at the little farm in the summer. And in the fall they went out herring fishing around the coast there.
So your father was away from home a lot of the time?
A lot of the time, yes.
Was that a dangerous occupation?
Oh, yes. Yes, there were many that lost their lives.
Many lost their lives. Before we go on about the fishing, I'll finish your family. How many children were there in your family?
10. And I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest of 10?
Yeah.
I'll get the names of your... Well, you just want to say the names of your brothers and sisters, if you remember them?
Well, the oldest one was Hilda, or Hilmar, or Jens, and Gustav, Peter, another Hilmar again, and Karen, and the Adelaide, and Geneva, and Norval. But the three first ones died in the infancy. I thought that Karen was about a year old.
And it was common then for children to die in infancy in those days?
Well, it was the diphtheria epidemic.
An epidemic of what was?
The diphtheria.
Oh, diphtheria. I see.
Then my mother was going around in the neighborhood helping the other. And the one the doctor came and told her they better go home because the family had a tooth, they better take care of the family.
I see. Do you remember your grandparents, Mr. Styro?
The only grandparent that I saw was my father's mother.
Did she live with you there?
She lived with us there for a while.
What do you remember about her?
Well, she was quite tall, stately woman, very capable. I think she was quite old when I learned to know her.
And had her husband, your father's father, been a fisherman and farmer also?
Yeah, but he died very young. He died when my father was but 1 year old. Died at sea.
He died at sea?
Yeah.
He was, his boat was sunk?
Yeah.
Or?
He just disappeared, I don't know.
Is that when the boats are lost, is that due to storms usually?
Yeah.
Bad weather?
Bad weather.
Do you remember anything or know anything about your mother's parents?
No, they were both dead before I was born.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, the background of your family name, you say Stiro is the name of the place. Do you,
uh-huh.
Does it have a meaning in Norwegian? Does the word mean something?
Well, really, I've been trying to find out, but I haven't been able to.
Now, I've heard, do some people pronounce it Styro, or have you always pronounced it Styro?
Styro.
Styro.
In Norwegian.
Uh-huh. So, is there a difference between the Norwegian and American?
Well, it seems that the American doesn't seem to get the wrong slang to it, so we let it go as an American pronunciation.
So, now you just say Styro.
Yeah.
And that name has not, has it changed at all? Did you change the spelling or
no.
of your first or last name
no,
when you
no.
when you immigrated?
No.
No. Now, can you describe your childhood home there in at Stiro? What was the place like? What do you remember about it?
Well, it was a nice white painted little farmhouse and up from the water, but. 5-6 blocks.
Mm-hmm.
They had a few cattle,
mm-hmm.
and a horse. We helped him as he grew up enough to help my mother with the farm and my father for corn.
Mm-hmm.
A very kind and a good both father and mother.
You had a kind and a good mother and father.
Yeah.
What now? Can you elaborate on that? What was in your memory? What's good about them?
Started my father. He was on the board, I might say, of the welfare service there, and he had pretty meager means.
Mm-hmm.
When the means for the county ran out, he had to take out his meager means to help.
Yes. So your parents would help others who didn't. Now, was that common was this a small community there?
It's a small community, yeah.
Can you guess how many people might have lived on the island there or around your home?
Well, the island is a big island.
Mm.
There is actually 3 counties on the island.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty big island.
Mm-hmm.
But to begin with, there wasn't so very many where I went, but growing up, it was quite a place now.
Uh-huh. When you were growing up, were there many families in the area?
Sortland, around there where I grew up, that was about 2,000-3,000 people.
Oh, mm-hmm. And was it common for people to help one another? You say the way that your parents would help others.
They were quite common.
Mm-hmm. How would people help one another? Would they give food or?
Yes. Or if you needed help with the work.
Mm-hmm. Who built your family home?
My father.
Mm-hmm.
It was a part of the family farm. He got a part of it. There were 2 brothers divided.
Mm-hmm. What is the land like there? Is it good for farming or?
Yes, it's quite a good land. It's a slightly up from the water, about 3,000-4,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
to up to the hills.
Mm-hmm. And so there was good soil there, and
yes,
mm-hmm.
a very good soil.
Mm-hmm. What types of crops would grow there at the farm?
Well, mostly hay and potatoes.
Mm-hmm.
And vegetables.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't raise any corn or anything like that. They could get barley once in a while, but the summer was pretty short.
Now the summer was a critical time in farming then?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. You know, what was your mother's occupation? You mentioned that she pretty much took care of the place?
When my father was gone, he took care of the place and took care of the family.
What would the duties of a woman on the farm be then?
He had to milk the cows and feed the cows and take care of the things in general,
mm-hmm.
the family as a whole. in the, because we were a little bit away from the church, because that's on sideline. And on Sunday, he didn't always get to the church in the winter, bad weather. So she had service at home.
You would have service? Would other people come to that?
And all just the family,
mm-hmm.
children.
And your mother would conduct the service?
Yeah, my mother conducted the service, and the service was always taken out and go out skiing.
Skiing? Oh. Well, tell a little bit about the skiing there.
Oh, they were hills just back at the farm. So we were raised on skis.
You were raised on skis?
Yes.
When would children start to ski it?
Oh, 4 or 5 years old.
Mm-hmm. And what were your skis like? Did you make them?
Oh, yeah, I made them. To start with, we had only shorts, about 2-3 feet long. After we grew, the skis grew with us, we got bigger skis.
How were they made? Of what material?
A fir or pine.
Did you make skis for yourself?
Yeah.
And what else do you remember? What do you remember about growing up in the, what are the good memories of growing up there?
Well, the close family circle. I can't recall one disagreement, really, or argument within the family.
Mm-hmm. Now, so you lived close together there with many people in one home.
Well, it was just the own family.
Your immediate family.
But beside the tent that my mother was born in, she raised two girls.
Who were not members of your family.
Not members of the family.
How did that come about?
The one was an orphan, and the one was a regiment girl. He didn't have the father, and the mother didn't have much, so he called my mother for help, and she took them in. He stayed there from infancy till they married.
Mm-hmm. What was your, now, what age were you when you left Norway?
Well, I was 25.
Mm-hmm. So you did all your, you went through school there, and mm-hmm. did you live in the same place until
yeah.
you left?
Mm-hmm.
What, tell a little bit about your schooling and how that progressed through the years. Or
we went to the grade school. We didn't have any high school there, but the eighth grade was just about equal to high school that we have here, except for we had only one language.
And so now, what was the school like then?
Well, the school where I went to was a log cabin.
A log cabin?
With two rooms, one downstairs and one upstairs.
And how many teachers did you have in the school?
We had only one teacher.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything about your teacher or about the, that stands out in your, anything that stands out about your schooling?
In fact, I had three teachers
mm-hmm.
in the time I went to school there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good, excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
The first teacher, his name was Martin Enge. He was the brightest.
Mm-hmm. Why do you think he was the brightest?
Well, he seems to a more all-around person.
Mm-hmm.
He was bright in his good in his teaching, and he could tackle almost anything. And he graduated to higher, teacher higher school class afterwards.
You went to 8 grades, and then did your schooling extend beyond that? Did you go somewhere else?
I took some extra courses after that, but that was so far as you can go there, except for some other place. They had some extra courses that I took afterwards. Then I took some correspondence courses besides.
What types of things did you study? Do you remember?
Well, it's business, bookkeeping, and the business correspondence, and also one the technical course
mm-hmm.
from Peter Robin.
When you finished with actually going to school, what did you do? What as a teenager? What was your responsibility?
I went to a work in a machine shop.
Right
in the close by, probably a mile or two from where I live.
And did you live at home then?
I lived at home for a while, but in the winter time, there was a neighbor close to the shop there.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty far to walk and kind of weather.
How long did you work in the shop then?
About a year.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened? Just tell what happened up until the time that you decided to leave Norway.
Well, I worked in the shop for a year, but I was paid only one crown a day. It used to be about a quarter,
mm-hmm.
or a little bit less than a quarter in American money.
Did you support yourself on that, or?
Well, it was really hard for my parents, yes. But then I went on a steamer, the fireman. It was a fishing steamer, and I've been there for about 2-3 weeks. The engineer took sick off the sea, so we had to go down to the hospital with him, and I had to take over the whole thing until we got a new engineer.
You went out on a ship,
yeah.
A fishing boat?
A fishing steamer, yes.
Uh-huh. Was that, and that was a large fishing boat?
Well, it was a pretty good size.
Uh-huh.
But that was the roughest. Turned out I had to stay the day and night because I don't know what I'm about to change off.
And you had, now what was your responsibility on the boat? You were the engineer?
I was a fireman, but I had to be the engineer too.
Mm-hmm. How long did that job last?
Well, for about a couple of weeks till we got a new one. So I was there for about a year or so. But I always liked to be. To go to school and be an engineer, but then came the First World War, and that stopped that.
Why would that change your plans? Why did that?
Well, for financially, and the other thing, and then they were called in the third. Later on, they were called into the service.
Were you called into the service?
Yeah, in the First World War, yeah.
And
in Norway.
What was your service like? What happened?
In the infantry.
And where did you go to train then?
To Elvegårdsmoen, over by Narvik.
Mm-hmm.
I was there, after I was through my training, I was on border patrol between Norway and Sweden.
Uh-huh. And how long did you serve then?
Well, about a year. And when I came out of that, I was commercial fishing. And I could see that one door closed after the other, what I planned to do. I went fishing and then to try for navigation. So I went to a navigation course and took my navigation there.
Mm-hmm.
So I could be a skipper on a steamer. And so it happened, but 2 years later, or 3 years later, I was a skipper on the same steamer where I was a fireman.
The same one you had started on before?
Mm-hmm. I was there for. And I couldn't get my certificate before I was 21. So it happened that the skipper on that boat took sick just a few months after that I got my certificate. So I was on the other boat then at that time. But he asked me to go over there and to go over his place. And I stayed there for about 4 years. And we were up in Finnmark fishing for herring. On the way home for Christmas, but after Christmas we went out to Haugesund to fish herring there. We went out in a severe snowstorm. And I stood on the open bridge for about 14 hours. And it was too hard on my eyes when I come down. I was so sore I couldn't close them.
Were you snow blind?
Yeah. And the 2 meters stream to stand up in the snow.
And you were trying to navigate and see the way you were going. Mm-hmm. How long did that take? Did you recover from that?
Well, I recovered quite soon, but I had to wear glasses.
Mm-hmm.
And I figured that to be a skipper to wear glasses, and I was there, it's not very good. But then that winter, I bought fish. My two brothers and two cousins sponsored me, and I bought fish for them that we sold for lutefisk. And he made his money.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the meantime, my father written to my brother who was here. He thought it would be the possibility for me to come over here. And he said he was in the contracting business here at that time. They said if he come over, he'd try to help.
Which brother was over here? What was his name?
Peter.
And how long had he been in America at that time?
Well, maybe he'd been here for about 15 years then.
Mm-hmm. Was he the only member of your family?
No, we were.
Who was in America? How many members of your family were here?
He was the only one. I had the uncle and him.
And your uncle was your father's or mother's?
He was my father's brother, half brother.
Uh-huh. Why had your brother gone to America?
Well, he was a commercial fisherman as a teenager, and he didn't like that. He liked to be a carpenter or a builder. And his uncle was over here already doing the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So he would like to took it off to see the world and went to America.
Were there many people in your community going to America in those days?
Quite a few.
Uh-huh. Is it something that you heard about or knew about?
Immigration was quite heavy at that time.
Why do you think it was so heavy at that time?
Well, it was a pretty hard time in the 1900s up to 1920. It was a pretty hard time in Norway. You want to get out and see if you could do better.
I see. And so did you have thoughts yourself that you might want to go to America? Or had
it never entered my thoughts before.
It didn't enter your mind until?
Before I got a letter from my brother.
Your father then went ahead. You didn't know about it.
No.
He went ahead and wrote.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a letter back from your uncle?
From my brother.
Uh-huh. And
it was in... It was in the later part of April I got a letter.
What year would that have been?
It was in 23. Mm-hmm. In the 20th of June, I left for America.
When you got that letter, what did you think?
Well, I just married in 22.
Mm-hmm.
And talk it over with my wife, which he told, and my parents, which he told me to do. Maybe they had to wear glasses and I couldn't be a skipper. I was thinking probably I could start some business on land. I still had the urge to do something mechanically. Mm-hmm. It was such a little machine shop or with a ways to get the fishing boat up on.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a nice place selected for that. And they wouldn't sell me the land. And like I said before, just like one door after the other. Was closed.
One door after another was closed to you, just the way things happened in your life. It
mm-hmm.
was the first thing. Now let's see, how did that go? It was the war interfered.
Yeah.
Then the being blinded by the snow and
mm-hmm.
and it just worked. Did you kind of feel that maybe it was that things worked in a certain way for a reason?
I didn't tell them at that time, but as I grew older, so what happened, the almost things that. The good Lord has another plan for me.
Mm-hmm. And so you had married then in 1922. How did you meet your wife?
Well, she was a sister of my brother's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she came over to take care of her when she had the first child. And I was laying up with a blood poison in my leg for about 10 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when we met.
Mm-hmm. And you were you married in Stero there?
Yeah, at home, yeah.
And so then, did you and your wife set up your own home or?
Well, we had a place in the old home, yeah, where we had a.
Mm-hmm. So you were living in the family home.
We kind of lived in the family home to begin with, but to see what happened.
What was your wife's name and maiden name?
Petra Pedersen.
Mm-hmm. And so, go ahead.
Yeah.
When you made your plans to come to America, then did your wife come with you at the same time?
Yeah, she came with us.
Mm-hmm. What did she think about that?
Well, she thought it'd probably be all right. She had a cousin here at Tacoma already, so.
Oh, she had a cousin.
Yeah.
And so you had heard about Tacoma before, many years before.
Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. What did you know? What did you think about Tacoma? What was your idea of? Did you have any idea what it might be
like?
Well,
I had really no idea. But, my brother was whom the year before, when he was home in 21, they had learned a little bit from that about Takuma, but
mm-hmm.
they had no idea either what, how it was.
Mm-hmm. Why Takuma? Why was it in this place that you think your brother and your uncle came here? Was Takuma known in Norway as a good place
well,
to go?
My uncle's brother-in-law was here before. My uncle came to him, and my brother came to my uncle.
So it just passed down.
And I came to my brother.
I see. Just passed down that way.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go on with your immigration to this country, I just want to go back and just a little bit about the customs in Norway, in your home there. We're coming on to Christmas time now here. Was Christmas a special time in your...
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Can you describe what that was
yeah,
like?
Yeah, well, they did baking in the line of food, everything special that they could afford.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a Christmas tree and clean house. The house was really clean, ordinary, but special for Christmas.
The women would do this work? Or
oh, yeah, yeah.
Clean especially hard for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But the men, when we send them out fishing, we used a few days before Christmas.
Uh-huh. And so was that a special for the men to come off the boats then and come to a special Christmas celebration?
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What was that? Was that a meaningful to come back to
yeah,
that?
Yeah, that was a pretty eventful thing.
Mm-hmm.
And Christmas Eve at 5 o'clock, all business stopped. And the church bell for chiming for a whole hour.
And
you could hear it all over the countryside.
So Christmas Eve in Norway, is that the special time of Christmas? Is the night before Christmas?
Yeah, the night before Christmas.
Uh-huh. And how were the, what, did you have gifts exchanged? What were
oh,
the,
yeah.
Was that done Christmas Eve?
Yeah, Christmas Eve, yeah.
Uh-huh. And how would the house be decorated, the tree? What did that look like?
Well, it's the same as we have here. We didn't have the fancy decoration that they had. They made their own decoration, and we had to have small candles. Because we had no electricity
mm-hmm.
at that time.
Candles on the tree?
And we had candles in the windows.
Mm-hmm.
And when you speak about gifts, you know, 1 year, you know, during the war, it was really the First World War, in which three of our boys were home, and it was pretty tight for the people around that they could buy everything but rationing.
Mm-hmm.
We decided as a family not to give each other anything for Christmas, but whatever we could afford, we do something for the neighbors that were worse off than we were. And it was the happiest Christmas the family had.
Is that right?
Huh?
And what did you take gifts to the other people or
no.
food or?
Uh-huh. Food or gift, whatever.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. My mother and the older sister helped with what they thought they could do.
And you remember that Christmas as a good one?
Yeah.
What, just, can you name a few of the special Christmas foods? What would you remember? What would stand out in your mind for Christmas? You had special baking? What would the women bake that would be special?
Oh, well, just about the Norwegian cookies that we have here.
Mm-hmm.
In the grisesylte, you know what I mean?
No.
The pig that they prepared especially for that. It's very good, it's pretty hard to describe how it was made.
It's a pork made
it's
from
a pork, yeah.
A pork dish, uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
And when would that be eaten, Christmas?
Yeah, they use that instead of a meat sandwich.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they had the...
Now you mentioned lutefisk once before, and a lot of people think of Norway, they think of lutefisk. Did you eat lutefisk?
We had, but not that had more lutefisk in America than had in Norway.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Did you eat lutefisk at Christmas time?
Oh yeah, before Christmas. But we didn't have it too often there.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had other meat rolls that they prepared in the fall when they started.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the cattle
mm-hmm.
And baking it, their
So you decided to come over here. You had an idea what you were going to do exactly?
No, I didn't.
You thought maybe you could set up the little business?
My brother had a fishing boat, because there was a few years that the building was kind of slack. Her uncle bought the boat. He went out fishing, and he did pretty well. But of course, I thought probably I could take that over and do some fishing.
Mm-hmm.
But he sold the boat just before I came.
Hmm.
So another order was cool.
That was another, and you had to keep finding a new way.
Yeah. So he didn't have any contract to work at that just when I came, but he had a friend there. I got in with him. At a school over in Puyallup.
Okay, before we go into what your life in Tacoma, I'd like to go back and talk about your journey over here and how that went. Now, did you have to wait? I know you say it went from April until June.
Yeah.
And what did you have to get, special papers? How did the process go?
We had to get the tickets, and we had to get the visa to get over here, and all that things. And of course, there was a certain amount they could emigrate each month. And the American restriction got stronger every year. And we were the last one to come over that year.
There was a quota, how many could go?
Quota, yeah.
And you just got in the quota for 19...
The last of the quota for that year.
For 1923.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What types of preparations did you and your wife make? Did you pack many things to bring with you?
Well, we packed it because I made some bedroom furniture, but we had to leave those.
Mm-hmm.
But other things, were wedding presents and things, we packed in two trunks and brought them with us.
You had two trunks?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how did your trip go? You were there in your home, and how did you travel?
And we took the boat from Thornton to Bergen. And then we took the Stavangerfjord, the American Canadian line, from Stavanger, from Bergen to New York.
You came on the ship called the Stavangerfjord? The Norwegian, the Scandinavian American line?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Well, the Norwegian American line.
Norwegian American line.
Yeah, okay.
How did your family, your parents, feel about you going? Or your
Well, they could see that there was a future right there at the time.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember how you felt the day you sailed away from your home?
I tried to be brave, but it was hard to say goodbye to my mother and father.
It was hard to say goodbye.
And I will never forget the last word that my mother said. The son, of this time, I've been trying to protect you against the evil, but now you're going out on your own, on the evil world, and I can't be with you anymore. But my prayer will be with you, and I know you'll be safe.
Mm-hmm. And that's the last words your mother sent you with?
That's another last word, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so you sailed to Bergen,
mm-hmm.
And had you been to the city of Bergen before?
Oh yeah, yes. Oh. We were fishing along the coast there, so mm-hmm. Been to Bergen many times.
Nice. And what was it like when you got on? Did you have to wait in Bergen to go on the Stavangerfjord?
Well, we waited about a couple 3 days.
Mm-hmm. And what was that ship like?
Well, it was a wonderful liner, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
A very good seaboat.
What do you mean by that? A good.
Well, it carried itself in the sea.
Uh-huh. Yeah. It was sailed well,
yeah,
or
yeah,
steady in the
yeah,
ocean.
Yeah.
What?
Some ships rolled quite a bit, but it was very steady.
Mm-hmm.
But we had a couple of days of pretty rough weather.
And this was in June. It was summertime.
Yeah, it was in summertime. Yeah, but it still was pretty rough weather.
Mm-hmm.
We won breakfast. I think there was about 300 or 80, between 200 and 300 that dining room that he was in. I don't think it was more than 2 or 3 dozen.
Two or three dozen people. What, by the others were?
Well, they were a bit seasick.
Seasick, uh-huh. What type of accommodations did you have?
Oh, we had a stateroom by ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And were there different classes?
Yeah,
or some
different classes. There was a tourism first class.
Mm-hmm.
We traveled tourists,
mm-hmm.
cheaper, but it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very, very good company.
Do you know how much it cost your ticket over? Any idea?
I think there was about 700-800 crown.
How much would that have been, do you think, in American money, about?
Well, about $150.
No, that was for each or for both?
For both of them.
For both of you together? Did you, were there people from other countries coming at the same time on the ship?
Well, it was mostly Norwegians, but there was one German that came. He had his pocket full of German mark. When I leave Norway, I throw the rest overboard because he isn't worth anything.
He threw his German marks away?
Yeah, they wasn't worth a thing at that time.
Oh. Did you meet people on the ship?
Yes. Of course, we were six from this from Sortland that came on the same boat.
Mm-hmm. So you had a group you knew?
Oh, yeah. In fact, one day you passed away a couple of weeks ago.
Someone right here in Tacoma,
yeah,
that has been here all those years?
Yeah, we've been working together.
What was that person's name?
Roy Peterson.
Mm-hmm.
We've been working together in France for over 50 years.
And
now
he came on the Stavanger Fjord with you?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So then you had a couple of days of rough weather, and do you think... It was as you were coming over across the ocean. What were your thoughts about what was coming ahead? Did you?
Well, we were just wondering what was going to happen. We didn't know the language, and everything would be new.
Mm-hmm. And so, how long did it take to get to New York?
Well, about 7-8 days. You know,
about a week.
It took about 21 days from we left home to reach Savitsatsuma.
Uh huh. And when you arrived, you went directly from Bergen to New York.
Mm-hmm.
And tell me about arriving in New York.
Well, it came in New York, it was herded almost like sheep. Okay, first it took us to Ellis Island, the immigration station there, you heard about it.
Ellis Island, what was that like?
Well, it was, it took the ferry from the main dock over to the island. And then they had to go through the immigration, be examined and every way.
Examined by doctors or?
Both by doctors and financially if they had enough means to get to our destination.
How did they check you for that? Were you required to have a certain amount of
money?
We
had to have a certain amount of money or tickets.
Uh-huh.
Beside the cash. We had a ticket and some cash.
Do you know how much you were supposed to have?
I think we had to have around 70 crowns, 75 crowns each.
And
that's the minimum.
And did you have, were you able to go?
I had already that.
Did that cause difficulty for some immigrants, that money, having enough money?
Well, yes.
Did some people have to go back?
Well, the minimum have to go back. That was probably something here, but they were detained there maybe until they could straighten things out.
Detained, uh-huh. What was Ellis Island like? What were the buildings like?
Well, we couldn't see much. We were herded into a great big building with several rooms, and we were led from one to another. And we were checked with a chalk mark from one examination to the other.
They put chalk marks on your body?
Yeah. On your clothing, yeah.
On your clothing?
Yeah.
What when you were going through that, do you remember what you thought about it? Or?
Well, it gave a little funny feeling, of course.
Mm-hmm.
He checked you on the back so you couldn't see what marks you got either.
Oh. And were people concerned that they were getting the right mark?
Well, there was some that would hold back.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you and your wife together during this experience?
Together, yeah.
Men and women together there?
Mm-hmm.
And how long were you at Ellis Island?
Oh, it was just a few hours.
Mm-hmm.
We had everything clear, so they got back at the railroad station. I think we took the train the same night.
Uh-huh. Do you remember coming into New York? Do you remember your first glimpse of it? Did that have a special meaning for you, or what you saw at
Well,
first?
Of course, we heard about the Statue of Liberty. It was over the first, and then we saw in the dense fog, we could see the skyscrapers.
Mm-hmm. You could see, and did that, what did you think? Was that something that you had never seen before, or
well,
unusual?
I hadn't seen a skyscraper like that before, no.
Did you see the Statue of Liberty as you came in?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did that have a special meaning for you?
Because liberty had a meaning of freedom. That was, but,
mm-hmm.
but we didn't know what it mean to us because they got here. They were all new.
When you came to Ellis Island and you spoke Norwegian,
all Norwegian,
did that cause a problem for you?
Yes. Because we had Norwegian English directory at the hand, so we were stuck with.
You brought along a dictionary,
yeah,
of English Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Did you need to know English at Ellis Island, or?
Well, they really, I can't remember. They asked many questions. You had to show the paper, and that was all there.
How did you know? You say you went the same night to the train. How did you know? How did you get to the train? You're in a new country, and you don't know the language.
You were just taken there to the train.
You were taken there.
Yeah, and there was somebody there. See that you got on the train.
So there were people there who guided you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then they took the train to Chicago. You had to change the train there to go out west.
Mm-hmm.
And if you got to put it, they come to Chicago the next day. You had to sit up all night. They were pretty tired. Then we took a sleeper to Chicago. Out west here,
mm-hmm.
and then the conductor he took our ticket and gave us a slip for the sleeper. When we came to St. Paul, he had to change train again because to Tacoma. And I told him in past New Ha that I want a ticket back, but he made a point to go up to the station, the depot. He went up there and. Nobody knew anything about the ticket there. Then I went back to the train. He said, I left. Because I told him in the region I want to have my ticket. But he just paid at me and took off. So luckily enough, there was one working on the depot there, new Norwegian. So we explained the situation. I wasn't the only one, it was Thea was. I explained the situation, so he called to Minneapolis, and he caught the train there, and so he gave us a slip, but we got to Minneapolis, the train from St. Paul to Minneapolis,
mm-hmm.
and got our ticket there, and came there.
So you had a little trouble because you couldn't communicate, and...
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
And of course, it was the fault of the conductor, too.
Mm-hmm.
He probably was to use the ticket for somebody else, you know, never know.
Uh-huh. He just took your ticket from you, really,
yeah,
is what
he did.
Uh-huh. Do you think that, and so you think he might have been taking advantage of you?
Well, that was the only reason that we could think of it. Probably he had somebody who was going out west and he was going to use the ticket for that.
Mm-hmm.
I can't see any other reason.
Uh-huh. What, do you remember anything else about the trip across the United States? Did anything stand out in your mind about?
Well, all the other passengers in the train started talking to us, and we couldn't talk English. So. And we came out on the Chicago Milwaukee line.
Mm-hmm.
And
how long did that take then, from New York to Tacoma?
3-4 days, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Were you? Did you have food with you? Did you have to order food on the train? Or?
We ordered some on the train, but we had some with us. And there was a little kitchen so where
you could
be cooking too at that time.
You could cook on the train?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So we had some. We could buy on the station.
The tape is just about to run out on this side, and we'll continue with your arrival in Tacoma on the other side, Mr. Stiro.
In the afternoon, and my brother and his wife went to the depot, and there was the old Milwaukee depot, 26 and D.
26th and E? Or?
And D.
And D.
Yeah.
Is that, now where would that be in Tacoma today? What part of Tacoma?
Well, it's torn down now. It's just below the Gulf there on 26th Street.
Mm-hmm. Down on the tide flats?
It's just below the hill there.
Mm-hmm. And the train came straight into Tacoma, or
yeah,
had it come through Seattle first?
It came through Seattle first.
Mm-hmm.
I think they stopped in Seattle.
Or
Auburn, I'm not so sure, but the.
Mm-hmm. And so you were met by your brother?
My brother and his wife, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they
took us home to. He lived over in Harrison and G. They stayed with them for a few months. They had an apartment upstairs. We got that and lived there for about a year.
What was your first impression of your new home, Tacoma? Do you remember?
Well, the very first impression when I came up on D Street here from 26, I saw those old little shack down below the hill there. Could this be the beautiful American that we heard about?
Mm-hmm. Didn't look so beautiful right then?
It didn't look so beautiful, no.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we saw better houses later.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the environment here as far as the geography? Did this area suit you that way, or?
My brother told me some about the mountain and the water and the sea here, and the Puget Sound and all that. I had a vague idea what it
mm-hmm.
looked like.
Mm-hmm. Some people have said that they think that this area looks like some parts of Norway.
It does in a way, yeah.
Mm-hmm. So when you moved in with your brother, and had he built his home there that he?
He bought the old house and they remodeled the two apartments.
Uh-huh.
So he lived in one and he lived upstairs in another.
I see. And then what happened now? How did you get along after you got here? And
well, we got along pretty fine. As they said, I want to go out and look for work right away, but he said you better wait a few days and rest up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a job for me with his friend in Puyallup.
What type of job?
He was building a school, and I was going to be a carpenter. It was the best thing I thought I was going to be.
That was the last thing you thought you would be?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. You had no carpentry experience? Or?
Well, I did carpenter work at home, but I never tried to make a living on it.
Uh-huh.
So I started there, and it was a combination of labor work and carpentry.
Mm-hmm.
He got me some tools that I could have.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember the first day he got there, he was going to bring some planks up to the second story. There were three of us. The other two was American. And they took one of each end of the planks and carried up a ramp. I was left alone with mine. It was pretty heavy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, about 2 by 10, about 20 feet long. But that evening, it was pretty well worn out.
It was hard work.
Yeah. Is this going to be the wonderful America?
Why did you think that? I mean, it was, you had an idea, or people talked about America being a wonderful place?
Yeah, everything was so big and wonderful.
Mm-hmm. And when you really got here and you were working hard? And
it was pretty rough breaking in.
It was rough breaking in. How about the language difference now? How did?
It's pretty harder to begin with. When you learn,
mm-hmm.
I went to night school there to begin with, and
did you start?
Tried to learn.
Did you start right away with the night school?
Yes.
Uh-huh. The area where your brother lived and where you had your apartment, was that a? Were there other Scandinavians in the area?
Yes, there were quite a few around there. Just up on the hill there,
mm-hmm.
a few blocks from here.
Did the Norwegians How was the Norwegian community? Was there a closeness or people?
Yeah, that was the same. So, and of course, we still had Norwegian language in the church just across the street from where I lived.
Which church was that?
The Bethlehem Lutheran.
That was Bethlehem?
The old Bethlehem, yeah.
And the services were conducted
in Norwegian
in 1923. How long did that go on?
Well, it went on until in 28 or 29, they changed it all English.
Mm-hmm.
They had Norwegian in the morning and English in the evening to begin with when I came.
Did you attend church right away when you
yeah,
got here?
I came on a Thursday and went to church with my brother and his family on Sunday.
You are still a member of that church? You have been for
ever
since you came.
Mm-hmm. We didn't join officially right away because we didn't know what part of the city we were going to be living. But as soon as I bought the property here, it was a few months later,
mm-hmm.
we joined the church.
Did your wife go to work when you came here?
Well, no, not to begin, but.
Mm-hmm. How long did you, then you started in Puyallup, and how, now you say just a few months later you bought property, so.
Yeah.
You must have acquired some money and.
Well, I tried to save for half of my paycheck. You know, it was pretty skimpy at that.
Mm-hmm.
It was but the only way to get ahead.
Mm-hmm. And so you purchased, how much land did you buy?
Two lots there.
Uh-huh. And you built this home?
Then you built a garage.
Mm-hmm.
And we lived there for 3 years. And he got more money and more time to build the house.
When did you build this house?
It started in 27, moved in 28.
Did you have children?
Yeah, two.
Mm-hmm. What are their names? And
the oldest is Orna Christine. He attended PLU, but he passed away in 57.
Mm-hmm.
And have other daughter, Pauline, he's still living on No 13th injection.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three grandchildren and three great-grandchildren.
Mm-hmm. And they live in Tacoma?
The oldest granddaughter lives in Seattle.
Mm-hmm. Where were your children born here in Tacoma? Did your wife go to the hospital then? And
yeah, he was the St. Joseph Hospital.
St. Joseph?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. With the first one. The second one, my wife had a little problem with her cousin, who had a midwife. So she stayed there for about a month for the birth of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the youngest one was born there.
Mm-hmm. How long was it before you felt at home here in Tacoma?
Well, I would say it was a few years.
Was it?
If it wasn't for my pride in my money, I would have gone back right away.
You would have gone back right away?
Almost, yes.
Why is that?
Well, when you start to work in a place, you don't know the language, and the new work that you haven't done before, it gets pretty rough.
Yeah, you felt it was hard?
And then someone that you work with, when they make fun of you,
yeah,
your language, and the
Do you feel there was prejudice against you as a foreigner?
Absolutely.
What forms did that take? Can you tell a little bit about how people might react to you as a Norwegian?
Well, it could be several ways. They could call names and make fun of things that you do, and you try to speak English, and I was just a herring choker.
What was that?
I was just a herring choker.
Herring choker?
Yeah.
That's, Now, was that something common that you encountered quite a bit with people acting that way, or?
Well, I wouldn't think about that. Quite a bit to begin with, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Did that hurt your feelings, or?
Well, I was too proud.
Mm-hmm. So you say but that you were too proud and you didn't want to go, you would have gone back to Norway, but you?
I was too proud to go back.
Proud to go back, uh-huh. What was the most difficult thing about coming here? The
language.
The language. Mm-hmm.
The work didn't take long to pick up that. The language.
Mm-hmm. You went to night school for quite a while, or how long?
for a while, and then went to high school to get my citizenship paper.
Mm-hmm. When did you become a citizen?
28.
Mm-hmm. And your wife?
Yeah, they took it a little later.
Mm-hmm.
No, but we're 29, I think.
Did your children speak Norwegian growing up in your home?
The oldest one, Orna, she wrote Norwegian just as good as I did. She took it at Lincoln and also at PLU.
Mm-hmm. Did you speak Norwegian to your
begin
children?
To begin with, we used at home, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then when your children went to school, did...
We had to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
The Doris, the youngest one, she understand the Norwegian. But
did you and your wife continue to speak Norwegian when you got here, or did you speak?
Well, it was the only thing we know how to speak.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to learn, but...
And you started, how long do you think it was before you could speak English pretty well?
Well, I still don't speak English very, very good.
You have a little accent, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's something that you can't get away from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Did your wife pick up English too?
Yeah, she picked it up.
Mm-hmm.
She had the accent. But she passed away in 71, the one that passed away.
Mm-hmm. And now you're remarried now?
I remarried.
And your wife's name now is?
Matilda.
Uh-huh. What was, and her name was?
Bo.
Uh-huh. Bo. Was she born in Norway also?
She was born here.
She was born here. In Tacoma?
No, she was born back in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
raised in Texas,
mm-hmm.
at the school in Minnesota,
mm-hmm.
St. Olaf, Columbia University in New York.
Mm-hmm.
She came out to Tacoma to Bethlehem as a parish worker. That's where we learned to know her.
Mm, through church.
In the church. And
mm-hmm.
was got to be a friend of the family.
Mm-hmm.
He went back to the Midwest, and the family kept in contact with her.
I see. You talked about some difficult parts about coming to Tacoma. What was the most exciting thing for you? Or was there something about coming to America? What was the good part about it?
Well, I could see a good opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
If you work hard and was thrifty.
Mm-hmm.
The friendliness of many people.
The friendliness of many people?
Yeah.
You think, yeah, that was something good? There were many friendly people.
Yeah.
Did you, when you socialized here, your community group in those early years, who were your friends?
It was mostly the Norwegians who used the Norwegian language.
Mm-hmm.
Till we got very acquainted with the...
Did you have contacts with other minority groups? Did you meet people from other countries?
Oh, yes. Yes, we did.
Mm-hmm. What was your main social life? Was that through the church life,
yeah,
did you say?
I think it must have been through the church.
Mm-hmm.
I was also a member of the Sons of Norway for a while. And I'm still a member of the Nordlight Club in Nordlending.
What's the name of that? Is that?
The Nordlight Club.
Mm-hmm.
Nordlandslaget.
Uh-huh. And how is that a special club?
Well, they go through the northern part of Norway.
Mm-hmm.
Your father knows that.
Mm-hmm. So how did your career go then? You started you started as a carpenter here, and
yeah, then what about a month? So, or two after I came, my brother got a contact that started with him, and then it started to get better.
Mm-hmm.
Because then I could speak the language to him if it was a problem. But
you started to work for your brother?
My brother.
Mm-hmm.
Then I worked for him when he had some work. And
what type of work did you do? What were you building?
Well, he was building everything. The first one, it was the Tiedemann's residence on Brown's Point.
Mm-hmm.
But then he got, he built a number of schools.
Schools?
Oh, yeah. quite a number of school.
Now, did you? Now you were taking part in this too in this
yeah.
in this building.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember some of the more prominent buildings in Tacoma that you might have built together or?
Well, he had a contract. I worked for him. Was at the Galt Junior High School.
Galt Junior High.
In Riviera Theater. Sometimes it's the one down now.
Which theater was it?
Riviera.
Oh, Riviera.
In the Peppa King Mortuary.
Mm-hmm. That, now, that's a brick building.
That's a brick, yeah. And
mm-hmm.
That was the Stewart Junior High, too, but that was for another one. And he had the, was the Lake City school. He was foreman on that. That was in the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And also at the Clover Park High School. And I was out at PLU for about 4 years. We built there.
Mm-hmm. You built Clover Park High School,
the
old building
the
out there.
The old building,
mm-hmm.
the one there.
And the Lake City School,
mm-hmm.
out in Lakewood.
Yeah.
Is that the old elementary school out in Lakewood? Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Now those are big buildings. Did your brother have this a big company?
Yeah.
And what was the name of that firm?
Stearwin Hansen.
Stearwin
Hansen.
Uh-huh. Hansen was another Norwegian?
Yeah, there was a neighbor in the old country.
What was his first name?
Peter.
Peter Hansen?
Both Peter.
Both Peter, uh-huh. Now, did you become were you a partner in this company? Or?
No, I was not a partner. But in the late 30s, I started for myself.
Oh.
And I built the Malmin, Gunnar Malmin's house. The first one, I had a contract on my own.
Uh-huh. What was the name of your company?
It was a Stereo Construction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then built the Raymond House apartment. If you know what it is.
No, I don't think so. You built homes for people mainly? Was
yeah.
that your main work?
I wanted to begin with because I didn't have the finances and experience.
How many people worked for you in those early?
I had a couple of three carpenters with me.
Mm-hmm. Did you have mainly Norwegian people working for you, or?
Oh no, but to begin with, there was some Norwegian. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, I was for myself till the beginning of the Second World War. But then, America got into the war, we couldn't buy any material. Had to have a priority to get material. And luckily enough, my brother had those three schools. It was financed by the government. So he got the priority on material. So I was back with him as a foreman.
Okay, you had started your own company, but then because there was a lack of material
yeah.
during the war, you went back and worked for your brother.
Uh-huh.
And then did you go back after the war into your own business?
Well, I worked for him till I built Bethlehem Luther in 1948, after the war.
Now you have built a number of churches.
Well, I built Bethlehem, Christ the King, and the two parents of the Trinity, the Good Samaritan Hospital in Puyallup, and the Zion Lutheran on 6th Avenue.
Zion Lutheran also?
And we remodeled the old Trinity Church, they tore down now, and also Luther Memorial.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to build churches? How did you get involved in that?
Well, I was interested in the work of the churches. So.
Were you active in church
yes,
life?
Yes, very much so.
How did you take part in church life
well,
in Tacoma? At Bethlehem Lutheran.
To Bethlehem Lutheran, when I really got active in it, I believe, they want a substitute school teacher. They had one class of three boys that nobody wants. And it took 30 years before they got a permanent teacher for them.
So you were a Sunday school teacher?
Yeah, 30 years, yeah. And then I joined the church. I was elected to different offices there.
Mm-hmm. What are some of the offices that stand out that you've served?
Well, I started out as a treasurer, and then I was a board of trustees and a deacon. And then in 1941, I was elected president of the congregation, and I was on my back and sick in the hospital. I think I couldn't defend myself. And I had that till the 51 for 10 years.
Mm-hmm. How?
And then I was interested in the Lutheran welfare. I was on the board there for 18 years.
And what is Lutheran welfare? Can you just?
It's care of the welfare work here among the Lutherans in the Pierce County.
What type of work might that entail?
Well, people there haven't got the means. Try to help them financially. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Now, you have been involved with the Lutheran Home. Is that part of the welfare work?
Yeah, part of it.
What is the Lutheran Home?
The Lutheran Home is the home for the elderly people.
Mm-hmm.
And they bought the old Masonic home in Puyallup for $15,000. It was in the late 30s. And the Lutheran Welfare had only $50 in the treasury when they bought that. But Mr. Torin, who was the head of the Lutheran Welfare, he knew of a farmer up in the valley, a pretty good friend. And he was up there and borrowed $500, so we got a down payment. That's how we started.
And they started. And now, where is the Lutheran Home now?
It's on the Lutheran Home, the Pearl Street.
Uh-huh. And are you still? Do you still take part in?
Well, not acting now. We are going there tonight.
Uh-huh.
The choir are going to sing. And going to
which choir is this?
The Bethlehem Lutheran.
The Bethlehem Lutheran choir is going to the Lutheran Home, and you're going there tonight.
Yeah, I'm going to take my wife over there.
Uh-huh. And your wife, you say, is playing the organ.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Have you ever been a member of a singing group? Yourself?
No, I never belonged to a singing group, except at school we sang there, but not in the other.
Mm-hmm. So, church life has been a big part of your life,
yes,
Mr. Studer.
Yes.
That means a lot to you. Can you talk about why do you think that church has been so important in your life?
Well, I think that Christ is very important to me. What He did for me. That we try to return something.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that this carries over from your childhood?
The teaching, the example of my parents.
Mm-hmm. And you came to this country, and you say you did welfare work, and you said that in Norway your parents had done welfare
mm-hmm.
work. You think that there's some connection between?
Well, of course I can connect it, but. They show the example, and the
mm-hmm.
teaching, and
mm-hmm.
the stuck.
What do you have one building or project you worked on during your career that you're most proud of that really means something special to you?
Well, there could be several. The Bethlehem Lutheran was the first big one that I supervised
mm-hmm.
in the Good Samaritan Hospital in Piala.
Mm-hmm.
For Christ the King. Because even in the early 20s, I was out there because we had many members in Bethlehem that lived out there, and it was too far for them to come in. But we were trying to get the church where I started out there. But they didn't have the means, and then during the Depression, they couldn't do much. So
mm-hmm.
then eventually.
When you built the church, did someone, was there an architect who drew the plans
yeah,
for that?
Yeah, the architect drew the plan. Of course, I had a rough sketch of what we would like to have, and he drew up the working drawing.
What year did you build Bethlehem Lutheran?
In 48.
And do you remember about Zion, what year that would have been? Zion Lutheran?
Zion Lutheran, that was in 54.
Uh-huh. And you say, and then the other one was Christ the King?
In 57.
Uh-huh.
And the Good Samaritan Hospital in 51.
51. Uh-huh. When did you retire?
And I retired only about 5 years ago.
Really retired 5 years ago? Was your business still going?
Yeah. The last few years I was together with Oscar Morgan, because he was ready to retire too, and he could help his other. And say, if he should lose anything, the burden will be so great on neither one of us. So.
Mm-hmm.
So he retired just about at the same time.
When you're during the 40s or late 40s or 50s, when you were really active in building projects, what was your working life like? What was a typical day like for somebody supervising the building of a big project? Your trips back there?
Well, the first time we took also the fuel from New York to Bergen, or to Oslo, Bergen and Copenhagen, back to Oslo, and then we took the train to Trondheim, and then the coastal steamer, Trondheim and up north, and we took the Scandinavian flew back.
Mm-hmm. What was it like to go back to Norway the first time?
It was fun. I haven't seen in for 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
But my hometown was just about the same as when I left.
It was just, you could remember it was the same?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have contact with family in Norway until now?
In fact, here, on my birthday, the 22nd of November, I talked to Tia on my telephone. He called here and I called. But the week before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you call back and forth.
Yeah.
Which people did you speak with on your birthday? Are these?
My niece and my two nephews.
Niece and nephews, uh-huh.
That's about all they have back there.
Have they come to visit you in America?
Yes, yeah. The one niece and her husband and her grandniece and her husband. here 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother here once.
Mm-hmm.
And my brother is dead now.
What, no one was your second visit to Norway?
68.
Mm-hmm. How, what do you think about Norway as a country today? Can you just describe the Norwegian people today?
Well, the money is plentiful people, and the living standard, I would say, tops, but everything's expensive.
It's expensive.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And one sad thing to me, people quit to go to church.
In Norway?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very few. In the home church, they think about 1,000. In there once, I was 17.
In your home?
In home church, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any ideas about that, why that happened, or?
Well, I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
During the war, when it was a hard time to go through, but after the war, money started to come in easier, and interest in sporting,
mm-hmm.
like that happened.
Does someone still live on your home place?
Yes, my nephew is there.
Your nephew is there.
Both my nephews, the one had the home place, and the other one just have a little place for his house.
And what is your nephew's name?
The Arneberg is the oldest one. The youngest one is Carl.
Mm-hmm. And they are sons of your.
My brother.
And your brother, his name.
Hilmar.
Hilmar. Uh-huh. Do you still use Norwegian? Do you still speak Norwegian? And when do you speak it? If you do.
Well, off and on, yes, of course. Summer, and I visited my second cousin from Norway. He could speak English, but they don't know, fine.
Mm-hmm.
I write Norwegian to them. But, yeah.
And you still write Norwegian?
Oh, yeah.
Respond back
keep
and forth.
It up.
Mm-hmm. Can you, do you have a special a prayer or a song or some saying that means something to you in Norwegian that you could say so we can hear you speak Norwegian?
Well,
something, just some little brief prayer or song that comes to mind that you could recite?
Well, of course, the table prayer, the Lord's Prayer.
Can you say the table prayer?
Yes, now for we the bush, speak or drink it for the door, take you to the air, was the gown, before the mouth, yes, now.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Can you say the Lord's Prayer also?
Father, Lord. You so very humble, have yet what it is now, come in this rike, share the will yet of my humble, go for you, he or she dog, what dog did you for lots of our children, and what we for lots of our children, or let us eat if you frisk us, the friends of the owner, the rike that is, back in the air, the living here. Amen.
Do you have any special keepsakes that you brought from Norway all those years ago that you still have? Any objects, pictures, or anything in your home?
Yeah, we have a few things on here. You can find it here.
Well, as you look back, how do you feel about having immigrated all those years ago? Do you think that was a good part of your, good thing in your life?
Well, I think I probably have accomplished something here that I will not accomplish in Norway.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back, it almost like it was the act of God to lead me here, because I closed every door there and tried to open.
Mm-hmm. What does it mean to you to be Norwegian, to be Norwegian-American?
Well, I'm proud of being a Norwegian, mm-hmm. for my heritage back in Norway.
Mm-hmm. What does your Norwegian heritage mean to you?
I would say honesty, for one.
The honesty?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the religion.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be several others too, but they're the most outstanding. Soft spot in your heart for your motherland.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Is there anything else you'd like to add about your career here or your life in America? Any comments you'd like to make?
Well, I have a confidence in the great things here, but we're trying to do the best I was able to. I told my wife, she'd be asking some questions too, but I didn't have an education to be a teacher, but I could build a school for others to teach. I didn't have the education to be a preacher, but I could be in churches where they could preach. And I didn't have the education to be a doctor, but I could be in a hospital where they could care for the sick.
Thank you, Mr. Stiro. This concludes our interview with Norwal Stiro.